In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. Glad you're joining us today. As every week, we help you keep an eye on big government. Last week, we heard the incredible story of John Kiriakou, a CIA whistleblower who was set up by the FBI. If you missed that show, I'll give a little bit of a recap in a moment when we bring our guests back, because this week we're going to dig a little deeper. Last week, we heard how John Brennan, the now former director of the CIA, and thank goodness for that, decided to go after John Kiriakou after he'd already been cleared of any charges of leaking information. What you heard last week tells you a lot about why we are where we are with the FBI and the Robert Mueller investigation and the whole Russian collusion nonsense. The people in charge and some of their subordinates apparently aren't afraid to resort to entrapment to go after people they don't like. Not because they've done something wrong, but because they've decided to punish. And it is a fearsome power that they hold, to unleash the power of the government against an innocent citizen. People like John Brennan and Mueller and James Comey are just bad people. But here's the thing. Why do they think that they can get away with it? Isn't this why we left England, to get away from agents of the king and stop them from abusing citizens? That they get to decide who is loyal and who isn't? Where are these fabled checks and balances? Why is Congress so powerless? Today we'll pick up where we left off last week and take a more in-depth look at John Brennan, John Kerry, and Robert Mueller and how they epitomize what is so wrong in America. I'd like to welcome now John Kiriakou. He is a former CIA officer and was the only person to go to jail for the CIA torture program because he was a whistleblower. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, just to summarize a little bit from last week, you had been recruited by a CIA operative posing as a professor. You started in the analysis arm but transferred to operations after 9/11. You then came back to the U.S. When you were approached to join the enhanced interrogation program, and you declined because you were personally against it and also because a superior warned you that someone would likely end up in jail over the whole torture program. And also, just to recap, it was I think they had asked 14 people, and you were the only person that said no?
That's right, unfortunately.
You know, that really had to have been an awful shock that so many of your friends and former colleagues would be willing to fall into that.
You know, that was the only time, or that I should say that was the first time in my career that I was really profoundly disappointed. Because like I told you last week, these were friends of mine. These are people I socialized with. Our children played together. Our wives were friends. And I thought I knew these guys. And as it turned out, I didn't.
Yeah, that had to be a shock. So after you then went on ABC and basically told the whole story there about the CIA torture program, that yes, in fact, they had been torturing Abu Zubaydah, that he was waterboarded, others were as well. They opened a file against you. They tried to prosecute you. They decided that you did not end up disclosing things that were classified. But then there was that secret operation that was going on behind the scenes. This happened while you were part of Senator John Kerry's Intel Committee. Talk to us a little bit about that investigation that was happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, I had no idea that this investigation was taking place. I was working for John Kerry on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee staff. I was the senior investigator. And as you mentioned a second ago, the Bush FBI determined that I had not committed a crime, and so they closed the case against me. The case was secretly reopened by Barack Obama at the urging of John Brennan. John and I went back to the late 1980s and never really liked each other too terribly much. I always thought he was a cowboy, and I always thought also that he had achieved far more than his intellect should have allowed him to achieve. Anyway, that's just a personal opinion. With that said, I didn't know that I was under investigation. And so the Obama Justice Department investigated me for another 3 years. Mm-hmm. And finally, a full 4 years after I gave the ABC interview, I was arrested and charged with 5 felonies, including 3 counts of espionage.
And just to pick up from where we had left off last week, because this is really what I had wanted to explore a lot more in depth this week. You had said that as part of your work with John Kerry's Intel Committee, that you had been approached by human rights activists about an incident in Afghanistan, about a massacre that may or may not have been accidental and may or may not have had CIA involvement. You have since come to believe that it was not an accident. But then there's this from your book. Before I could even make my first appointment, one of Senator Kerry's top aides called with a message, "Kill this investigation right now." There would be no explanation. It was obvious that word had gotten back to the CIA. I was looking into things that shouldn't be looked into. The investigation was over. You know, the fact that John Kerry squashed that investigation before it could really get going, how normal is that? That a senator can, or that a CIA can just call up a senator and says, "Stop looking."
As it turns out, it's actually quite common. And I learned that with John Kerry, it happened with some frequency. Because the first question John Kerry ever asked himself when he, you know, woke up in the morning is, what do I need to do today or not do today to become Secretary of State? Hmm. He was obsessed with becoming Secretary of State. And I actually, one of only 2 times I ever gave him unsolicited advice is I told him that he had to stop saying that in public. That he should have been Secretary of State instead of Hillary Clinton. Obama had promised it to him. He got screwed out of it at the last minute. I said, "Senator, you got to stop saying that. It just sounds like sour grapes." And he said, "Oh, I know. I just can't help it." But anyway, that wasn't the only investigation that he killed. I had another concerned citizen who called me. Well, actually, it wasn't a citizen. It was a journalist who called me one day and said that he believed that the CIA had begun putting torturers under State Department cover in order to protect them from congressional inquiries, which was a violation of the agreement between the CIA and the State Department. And would I investigate it? So I sent a letter to the CIA under Kerry's signature asking for clarification, and I gave them the example that the journalist had given to me. About 6 weeks later, one of my colleagues walks into my office and said, "Hey, you got a response from the agency to your letter." And I said, "I haven't seen any response, and I just checked my mail a few minutes ago." And he said, "Well, they classified it at the top secret level. And at the time, my clearance was only secret." And I said, "Well, what did it say?" And my colleague said, "It says F you." And I said, "Okay, I guess that's how they want to play it." So I went to Kerry. And I said, "Listen, I think that the CIA is in violation of the cover agreement with State. And mind you, we're the State Department's oversight committee. This is exactly what we should be involved in." And he told me, "Drop this right now."
Wow.
So I had to. That happened 3 or 4 times with Kerry. Now, just recently, I had the opportunity to confront Senator Ron Wyden, who's one of the senior Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee, because Wyden, although he says the right things, has never helped me at all. And I challenged him and I said, "You know, I really needed the help and you walked away from me." And he said the most interesting thing. He said, "It takes all of my energy just to not lose my security clearance."
Wow.
And I said, "Oh, okay.
That sounds rather suspicious."
I'll say. And what that tells me is the CIA is out there threatening senators.
Wow. Well, actually, that is exactly what I want to talk to you about in the next segment. Everyone stay with us. Does the CIA have leverage on U.S. senators and congressmen? We'll find that out next. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to John Kiriakou. He is a former CIA officer, has a fantastic book out there, Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. His other book is Reluctant Spy, My Secret Life in the CIA's War on Terror. So we were talking there about Senator John Kerry and whether or not they have leverage over some of these senators. And it sounds very suspicious there with Wyden there. As far as how the CIA gets these leverage on these senators, what types of leverage do you think they have?
Well, it's mostly political. You know, J. Edgar Hoover perfected this in the 1950s and 1960s, where the FBI is the only organization in government in American history that has never had its budget cut from year to year. And it was because Hoover would go before Congress every year and talk about how dangerous things were out there and how he needed more money because with more money he could do X, Y, and Z. Well, the CIA does the same thing. Do you want to be the senator or the congressman that votes against the CIA and then there's a terrorist attack? Because what they're going to do is they're going to call friendly journalists and they're going to tell those journalists, well, we probably could have prevented this attack except for Senator so-and-so who voted to cut our budget. And, you know, American lives were put in danger. Well, the next thing you know, you lose your reelection race. And they're not shy about doing that. Also, keep in mind that the CIA has a huge stable of very friendly journalists. A couple of them have been outed recently, like David Ignatius at The Washington Post. And the most obvious was Ken Delanian of NBC News. He used to be with the LA Times. Delanian was actually caught, thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request, clearing his articles with the CIA before he even sent them to his own editor.
Wow.
And the CIA was taking information out and then putting information in. Well, that's not journalism. That's propaganda. And that happens a lot.
Well, with the leverage that they have on these senators and congressmen, it totally flips the constitutional oversight. I mean, it sounds more like the CIA has oversight over the Senate rather than the other way around.
You are absolutely right. And that's what's so dangerous for our democracy. Because the CIA, not just the CIA, but any governmental organization is not supposed to have that kind of authority.
Well, just to kind of continue the discussion there of Kerry, I just have to read this little segment from your book because I think it is so absolutely chilling. This was right before you were you'd already been convicted and made the plea deal to go and take a 30-month prison sentence. And you said, I made one last ditch attempt to avoid prison about a week before I was due to turn myself in. I wrote Senator Kerry a long, heartfelt email and sent it to his personal email account. I asked if he would speak to President Obama for me and ask him to commute my sentence. The conviction would still be on my record, but I could stay home with my family and work to support them. I received his terse reply a few days later. Do not ever attempt to contact me again. That's just chilling.
That was probably the single most disappointing thing in this entire experience. I think about it all the time. And this was 6.5 years ago. And I still, or 5.5 years ago, I still think about it all the time.
Well, especially since, you know, it's clear that he's selling you out in order to protect himself. But also, this is a person in a powerful position who ought to be able to help U.S. citizens like yourself.
You would think. But again, he gets up every morning and asks himself, how does this help me become Secretary of State? And he had been Secretary of State by then. But then the next question is, how does this help my legacy or how does this help me become president?
So let's talk a little bit about John Brennan. I had asked you last week if he was an evil guy. You said that you thought he was and that he was a sociopath and would literally do anything to advance his career. We were short on time last week when I asked you that. Did you want to add anything to the idea of John Brennan being evil?
Yeah, I would. You know, there's kind of a famous story about John at the CIA. John was a career analyst. He was never in operations, at least not while he was coming up through the ranks. And so he was working for a woman who really didn't like him. He had been forced on her. And this was in the Directorate of Intelligence, which is the analytic unit of the CIA. So finally, John went to her and said, look, I've been a GS-15 for a long time. That's the highest grade you can be before you enter the senior intelligence service. He said, I've been a GS-15 for a long time. I think I'm ready for the senior intelligence service. And she told him, not only are you not going to be in the senior intelligence service, she said, I don't even want you working for me anymore.
Wow.
You're fired. Well, what happens at the agency if you're fired, and I use air quotes around that word, is that you have 4 weeks, I'm sorry, 6 weeks to find another job. And if you can't find the job after walking the halls for 6 weeks, then you really are actually fired and you have to leave. So he started walking the halls looking for a job. Well, this is right around Christmas, and there aren't any jobs open at Christmas. The jobs open in the summertime. So John looked all over for a job, couldn't find one. Finally, he went to the president's daily brief staff. And now this is the staff that produces the intelligence briefing for the president every morning. They did have an opening, and it was as a briefer for the lowest ranking person entitled to a PDB briefing. That's the director of intelligence programs at the National Security Council. And that happened to be, at the time, George Tenet. And so they immediately hit it off. I mean, they're two alpha males, hard drinking, cigar smoking, wife cheating, loud, mean guys. And they just became the best of friends. So when George was promoted to deputy director of the CIA, he brought John back with him, and he made John the deputy director of the office that he had been fired from. And so what was the first thing he did? He fired the woman that he used to work for.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy that he is.
Jeez.
He ended up, when George was promoted to director of the CIA, he made John the station chief in Riyadh. And then when he got back from Riyadh, George promoted him again to become the number three in the CIA. He became the executive director.
Hmm. You know, I've got some more questions here about John Brennan, Bob Mueller, Russian investigation, a whole bunch more. We're going to be picking all of that up on the other side of this break. Stay with us. Lots more with John Kiriakou. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking to John Kiriakou. He is a former CIA operative, and was an operative or officer?
Officer, operative is correct, too. The only thing that's not correct is agent.
Okay.
Those are the people we recruit.
I see. Okay. John went to jail when he was a whistleblower on the CIA torture program. His book is Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison. You know, we were talking about John Brennan there, and I have this theory. I think the whole Russian collusion narrative, the insurance policy, and the effort to derail or and or impeach Trump was cooked up by John Brennan. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you 100%. That's the kind of person John is. You asked me a moment ago why I thought he was evil, and I told you a story, but I didn't really give you specific reasons why I thought he was evil. It was John's job at the National Security Council to maintain what was called the kill list. It's a list of people that was drawn up every week that we wanted to kill around the world. Mm. It was John who made the final determination of who was to live and who was to die. Well, in that role, John was responsible for the murder of three American citizens. Now, two of these three were children. The White House later claimed that this was a mistake. We don't apologize as a matter of policy, but they said it was a mistake. The third was Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, Anwar al-Awlaki was a bad guy. He was a propagandist for al-Qaeda. But with that said, he was an American citizen, born and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And as an American citizen, he has a constitutional right to face his accusers in a court of law. So if he was the bad guy that John Brennan wanted all of us to believe that he was, then what you do is you snatch him. You send in a team of SEALs and you snatch him and you bring him back to Washington and you put him on trial. And when he's found guilty of providing material support for terrorism, then you put him in jail for the rest of his life or you execute him. But what John did was just order drone strikes. So we killed al-Awlaki. A week later, we killed his 16-year-old son. And then we killed his 8-year-old daughter. We also killed a 16-year-old nephew. You know, I believe in the war on terror. I believe that we need to keep America and Americans safe. But I do not believe in the extrajudicial murder of American citizens. And that was John's policy.
Well, I certainly think the whole Russian collusion story was cooked up in a real effort to derail possibly peaceful relations between the U.S. and Russia.
Totally agree.
I mean, these two countries, I mean, we could do great things if we could work together, but I think that there are forces that really want to keep the two of us apart.
I agree.
And on opposite sides, I think Putin would certainly like to improve his economy, but a good way to stop that is to keep up tensions. What makes you think that this was specifically geared, the whole Russian collusion thing, was specifically geared to keep the two countries apart?
I think that John and the Obama people were so petrified at the notion of Donald Trump winning the presidency, even if his chances were whatever it was, 5% the final week of the campaign, according to the New York Times. I think that they sowed these seeds of doubt and discord. I think that they, for example, when John was the CIA director, it was John who first floated the idea that the Russians were targeting Carter Page. And so it was John who was responsible for requesting that initial FISA warrant. Well, the investigation found that there was no Russian attempt to recruit Carter Page, but they renewed that FISA warrant three times. Mm-hmm. Why would they do that? They would do it just to spy on the Trump campaign. You know, when Donald Trump said very, very early in his presidency, and in fact, it may have been even during the transition period, that his phones were tapped and that he was being spied upon, and everybody made fun of him, right? MSNBC was laughing and CNN, but there was something to that. Now, Trump used the wrong lingo. NSA doesn't use taps anymore. That's kind of old school, you know, landline kind of technology. But what he meant was actually correct. There was this attempt to spy on the campaign. It was done in concert with the CIA and the FBI. They probably unwittingly used the FISA court. And people really were trying to pin, you know, that hammer and sickle on Donald Trump. Because just in case he gets elected, we can ruin him this way.
Hmm. Well, you said it was done really in an attempt to derail Trump. But, I mean, is there efforts, you think, in order to keep Russia at bay for some reason? I mean, for example, I look at what happened there in Syria. You've got the CIA involvement with the White Helmets, and pretty clearly yes. That the CIA is trying to keep America on the side opposed to Assad. But what's the purpose of really going after Russia the way that we have? I mean, in order to keep that divide alive between the two countries, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's simply because the defense contractors want this ongoing war. Is it more than that?
No, I think it's more than that. Although that's true, because we've entered basically into a full-time wartime economy.
Yeah.
And certainly people here in Washington have gotten rich. There are now more millionaires per capita than anywhere else in America. And that's thanks to the war on terror and the money being spent for defense and intelligence contractors. But I think there's more than that. I think that the Democrats saw an opportunity to be the hawkish party, the opportunity to say that they're the ones who are tough on defense. Now, Hillary Clinton hated Vladimir Putin and vice versa. And I think that they believed that that was a good thing politically, and they've run with it. Now, I agree with you that there are certainly many, many ways in which we can cooperate with the Russians. Counterterrorism, counter-narcotics, counter-proliferation, the oil pipeline across Western Europe, refining, shipping. They're all different kinds of things that we can do, but we've elected not to. You also raised Syria a second ago. I think this is a very important point. First of all, the CIA, frankly, doesn't know what it's doing in Syria. I've seen this happen a million times all through the course of my CIA career. The CIA will pick a side and just go with it. And frequently, they pick the wrong side. And they've picked the wrong side in Syria. They have funded and armed groups that have been tied or related to al-Qaeda. The White Helmets are a good example. With that said, it's also illegal for us to be in Syria militarily. There are two ways in which we can legally send troops overseas, and that is with a United Nations Security Council resolution or by the invitation of the internationally recognized government of that country. Now, Bashar al-Assad, whether we like his politics or not, is the internationally recognized leader of Syria. He invited the Russian military in. We didn't like that. But there's nothing we can do about it legally. So our presence there, even if it's just special forces, 1,600 special forces, That is a violation of international law. It's illegal. And we have no business being in Syria. But it's the CIA pushing us to do that. They're pushing the policy because it allows them to operate against ISIS, which is great. It allows them to operate against the Syrian government, which I think is less great. But the price for that is to arm Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups. And I think that price is too high.
Well, you know, I certainly think that both countries would be much better off if they could just find ways to work together. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, we'll be talking about Robert Mueller, his investigation, and also whether or not the CIA has tentacles into other government agencies. Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to John Kiriakou. He's a former CIA officer and has a book out there about his experiences being sent to jail as a whistleblower on the CIA's torture program. We'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. So, John, going out of that break there, we were going to ask you about Syria. So what exactly is the point of us being there in Syria?
I think it's twofold. One, it's to challenge the Russians. We've always had a policy of keeping the Russians out of the Middle East, dating back to the 1940s. Certainly, that's why we were involved in the Suez Crisis. That's why we ended up financing the Aswan Dam after all. I mean, going back more than half a century, keep the Russians out. That was priority number one in the region. Secondly, I think that we've had successive regimes now that really do believe in regime change in Syria. We don't like Bashar al-Assad. We didn't like his father any better. He slaughters his own people. But I would object to that for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's none of our business. We don't have any constitutional authority. We don't have any treaty authority. We certainly don't have the UN's authority to be over there. Secondly, again, you don't have to like Bashar al-Assad's politics, but he is literally the only thing standing between the Christian community of Syria and total annihilation.
Oh, yeah.
We get involved in these countries and we don't have any exit strategy. Well, the only alternative to Bashar al-Assad is a Sunni fundamentalist government, and a Sunni fundamentalist government is going to slaughter the Christians.
Oh, absolutely.
And we shouldn't allow that to happen.
No. So let's talk now about Robert Mueller, and we've got this IG report coming out that is very damning of the FBI, but we're finding out so much of this whole Russian collusion story was a setup by the FBI, very much like what they tried to do with you, with the Japanese diplomat.
Yes.
Papadopoulos, as we mentioned last week, was set up when an FBI informant gave him information, and then when he talked about that information to someone else who just happened to be another FBI agent, suddenly he finds himself in trouble. And now we're just learning this week that the FBI tried to set up Roger Stone when an FBI agent tried to sell the Trump campaign some dirt on Clinton. So how common is this, do you think, this notion that they don't investigate anymore, they just simply set people up?
Oh, you know, at the CIA, we used to joke about this all the time, that the only way the FBI could ever make a case is to entrap somebody. It's actually not funny anymore.
No.
That really is the way the FBI makes its cases, just by entrapping people. You know, look at all the witnesses, all the speculation in the press about the people who are going to flip or who have flipped, whether it's, you know, Manafort so he doesn't die in prison, or Rick Gates, or Carter Page, or Mike Flynn. I apologize. Or Mike Flynn. It's all because the FBI has set these people up, and they get them on what are called throwaway felonies. That is felonies that ought not to have been charged in the first place. Things like making a false statement, or obstruction of justice, or conspiracy, or perjury. They're nonsensical felonies. And for a first offense, you're talking about probation anyway.
Yeah.
But the only reason they charge these people with felonies is to force them to testify. And so what you do is you just entrap a couple of guys and you have them flip on your bigger target, and then you go after the bigger fish and you negotiate a deal with the lower level guys. That's how the FBI does its business, and that's exactly what they're doing here with the president.
Oh, absolutely. I know that you have said that he definitely should not talk to Mueller at all, but what do you think of Mueller himself? I mean, is he as dirty as John Brennan?
You know, I'm actually biased against Robert Mueller, and I'll confess why. Because it was at Brennan's insistence that Robert Mueller set up something called the John Kiriakou Task Force at the Justice Department in early 2008. He assigned 12 FBI agents to it. There were 5 prosecutors, and they had a team on me for the next 3 years.
So Mueller was the one investigating you then?
Oh, yes.
I don't think I knew that. Wow.
Oh, yes. I went on the Tucker Carlson show recently, and I told that story, and I said, if I could speak directly to the president, I would beg him not to cooperate with the Mueller people. Nothing good can come of that cooperation. All they're going to try to do is trap him or trick him into saying something that's inconsistent with a previous statement. And then they say that he's either an unindicted co-conspirator or that they're considering charging the president with a felony of making a false statement. And then your whole presidency collapses. Oh, man. But this is how Robert Mueller does business. And remember, it's not just Mueller, but the people under him. The only way they can get promoted is if they can successfully prosecute people. Yeah. And so that's what they try.
And there's your incentive for bad behavior. Let's go and take a break there because I want to talk to you about possible CIA infiltration and to get your thoughts on how we go about fixing things. Stick around. More with John Kiriakou, CIA whistleblower. And welcome back. This is I Spy Radio Show. Talking today to John Kiriakou. He's a former CIA officer, and he was sent to prison when he blew the whistle on the CIA's torture program. His book is Doing Time Like a Spy. We'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page. In terms of CIA infiltration, I find it interesting that you yourself were recruited by a CIA operative posing as a professor. I mean, how widespread is the CIA in universities?
Well, they're all over universities all across America, but in a very overt way. They have this program called the Scholar in Residence Program. And so they'll take a career officer who's at the very end of his career and thinking of retiring in 2 or 3 years. And, you know, if you're from, let's say, Indiana, they'll send you to Indiana University, or you're from Pennsylvania, they'll send you to Penn State or to UPenn or wherever you want to go. They'll set it up so that you can teach for the next 2 years and then retire in place and live happily ever after. What they used to do though, earlier, before the 1993 passage of the Equal Employment Opportunity Act, was to have professors all around the country, the officers undercover as professors looking for people who, like I said in the last installment of this show, looking for people who might fit into the CIA's culture. So that's how I got recruited, and that's how literally thousands of other CIA officers were recruited over the years. That's illegal now. Now you have to just go on the website and apply. But back in the day, I mean, that's how they recruited the so-called best and brightest, while at the same time keeping out, you know, women and African Americans, anybody else that they didn't like.
Hmm. Well, we talked earlier about the leverage that the CIA has over some of these senators and whatnot, including our own Oregon's Senator Wyden. What about operating within some of these other government agencies? I mean, does the CIA have operatives in, say, like the EPA or Treasury Department, maybe the Secret Service?
They do. Also overt employees. They have them all over government, places like Treasury and Commerce and State. DOD, of course, most people on the NSC are CIA officers on rotation there. They're at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They're at the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. They're everywhere. Now, a lot of them are analysts. So they're there just to sort of lend their expertise and to broaden their understanding of the way the U.S. government works. It's nothing cynical. They're not spying on anybody. But at the same time, it allows the CIA to have a very, very long reach. My own wife, while she was in the CIA, did 2 years at the Border Patrol. She was the intelligence advisor to the director of the Border Patrol. And that was something that really expanded her career, and it allowed Border Patrol to rely on her expertise.
Well, but are there ever any covert operations? I mean, certainly, if nothing else, you're working there in another agency, and you start to learn out, you know, maybe some of the personal secrets of some of these people that could then maybe be used against them later. Are there ever any covert operations within these other agencies?
Technically, covert operations against U.S. government employees or covert operations in the United States without the approval of the FBI are illegal. I'm not aware of any covert operations against government employees, but if you're a CIA operations officer and you go on rotation to some other governmental entity and you find an employee there with a weakness or a vulnerability, you would be a fool to not file that and try to use it later.
Hmm. Well, what about within Congress itself? Are there senators or congressmen who are CIA operatives?
Yeah, there are several who used to be CIA operatives. Will Hurd, a Republican congressman from Texas, I think he's the 23rd district, was quite a successful CIA officer. I was actually his mentor at the CIA. And we joked with him when he first said he wanted to run for Congress that we thought that was a step down from the CIA. But yeah, there are a lot. Porter Goss, who became a CIA director, had been a CIA case officer and then went to Congress and then went back to the CIA. So there are probably, you know, at any given time between 2 and 6 former CIA officers.
But those are all the former ones. Is there a chance any of them could be covertly working with the CIA?
No, that would be illegal, as it should be.
Well, you would think. Now, what about political parties? Are there operatives within political parties?
I would bet a paycheck that there are FBI agents that have infiltrated both of the political parties. CIA, no, because they don't have that domestic interest. But FBI, without any doubt.
Okay, let's dig a little bit more into that on the other side of this break, and that'll give us also a little bit more time to get your thoughts on how to fix some of this, especially since you went through the worst of it. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with John Kiriakou. We're into our final segment now with John Kiriakou, a former CIA whistleblower who went to jail for exposing the CIA's torture program. And John, the one question I haven't asked you yet is about the intel community spying on presidential campaigns. Should they be doing that?
Absolutely not. First of all, it's patently illegal. And secondly, and I want to speak specifically to the allegations that the FBI was spying on the Trump campaign. You know, so many pundits on TV are saying it wasn't spying, it was an investigation. But I can tell you definitively that it was spying, because if it was just simply an investigation, what the FBI would have done would be to go to the candidate or to go to the campaign chairman and say, listen, I think we have a problem here. We think that the Russians are trying to recruit somebody in your campaign, and then you let the FBI do their job. But that's not what they did. They spied secretly, and they repeatedly renewed this FISA warrant against Carter Page. Well, if this was a legitimate investigation into Russian interference, then President Trump, then candidate Trump, and at least Paul Manafort would have known about it. Neither one of them knew anything, and that tells me that the FBI was spying.
So the question is, why would they have done this? Was it to find crimes or to gain leverage over them, or maybe both?
Yeah, I think it was both. You know, Harvey Silverglade, a professor of law at Harvard University, wrote a book back in 2011 called 3 Felonies a Day. And he argues that we are so over-criminalized and over-regulated in this country that the average American, on the average day, going about his or her normal business, commits 3 felonies. And so if they want to get you, his conclusion is they're going to get you. Well, if you've got the FBI embedded in your campaign, of course they're going to find crimes.
Yeah.
Because everybody commits crimes. This is exactly what Attorney General Robert Jackson warned us about in the 1940s. He said that a prosecutor should find a crime and then investigate to find the person who committed it. He shouldn't find a person that he doesn't like and then find a crime that fits the person.
Well,
that's, I think, what we saw in the Trump campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've seen the FBI and CIA very reluctant to reveal what happened there with the Trump campaign because, I mean, have they been reluctant because they've been spying on campaigns before now? I mean, was Obama spied on? Was Hillary spied on?
That's a great question. We know certainly George McGovern was spied on. I would venture to say that Jimmy Carter probably was spied on. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, what makes this Trump situation even worse, in my view, is that we've already had the post-McGovern, post-Carter reforms on Capitol Hill. This wasn't supposed to happen again, and it apparently did. One of the other dangerous things, and this is only leaking out in drips and drabs, is it looks like this entire situation, this entire spying operation, was initiated by John Brennan when the CIA received what turned out to be bogus intelligence from the Estonian intelligence service. He called together the intelligence community to say that the CIA had received this intelligence saying that the Russians were targeting the Trump campaign and that they had recruited Carter Page. He turned the information over to the FBI. They continued to meet about the information as a community, but the information was bogus. The Russians had not recruited Carter Page. But still, the FBI didn't leave the campaign.
Hmm. In the couple minutes or so that we have left with you, let's say that Trump were to offer you a position of some sort on a panel that maybe had some oversight of the CIA. Would you take that? And if so, what would some of your reforms be?
Oh, I would take it in a heartbeat. I would take it in a heartbeat. And I think my most important reform would be to more clearly delineate the role of the oversight committees and to vastly increase the staff of the oversight committees. I'm not allowed to say how many employees the CIA has. The number is classified, but it is many, many thousands of people. Well, the oversight committees don't just oversee the CIA. They oversee all of the dozen and a half agencies within the intelligence community. So you're talking about, you know, more than 50,000 people.
Hmm.
Well, you've got a staff of 25 on the Senate Intelligence Committee and a staff of probably 40 on the House Intelligence Committee. You can't possibly oversee all those agencies with that kind of a staff.
No, absolutely. You know, in terms of fixing things, the reason you went to jail was because they essentially bankrupted you into it. And I think this is something that needs to be changed because when the government brings a case against someone, even if the charges are completely false, they have an unlimited, bottomless checkbook. They can spend years prosecuting you, essentially forcing you into bankruptcy or take jail. Which is what you had to do. How do you go about changing that?
You know, I think the only way to do it is through massive structural change. I think the only system that actually works in making a prosecution and a defense fair is the French system, where both the prosecutor and the defense attorney work for the government. They represent the law. And so together they investigate the alleged crime. If there is a crime, together they recommend a sentence to the judge. And it works. And in France, you know, the prisons are not overflowing with people who were forced to take a plea. Now, ProPublica came out with a study in November of 2012 saying that the federal government wins 98.2% of their cases, almost all of which are a result of plea bargains. And that's because the feds do this thing called charge stacking, where they'll charge you with 5, 10, 20 felonies, and they'll wait until you go bankrupt, and then they'll come back and they say, okay, we'll dismiss all the charges but one if you take a plea.
Yeah.
So you take a plea.
Yeah, you kind of have to, for sure.
You have to. It's an economic decision.
98% win, that's clearly indicative that something's wrong. John Kiriakou, I want to thank you so much for your time, and we'll definitely have to have you back.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
That is all of our time for today. We certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. We'll definitely have to have John back on. He's the kind of guest where you ask him one question, but his answer raises even more questions. Like, what do you think the CIA has on Oregon Senator Ron Wyden? But I'd also like to know, from a former spy, how you identify people in your organization, say a political party, who may be spies. Not necessarily CIA, but I definitely think the Oregon Republican Party has been infiltrated. That, or they're completely inept, which is another distinct possibility. June 30th is the deadline for signing two important petitions to get them on the November ballot, the Stop Oregon Sanctuaries and the Stop Taxpayer Funding for Abortion petitions. head to StopOregonSanctuaries.org and StopTheFunding.org. We'll link both of those up on our website, but don't wait. The deadline is next week, StopOregonSanctuaries.org and StopTheFunding.org. Head there right now, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.